there is a gun battle going on, and it's very heavy firing, and we are also hearing some blasts, and the firing is also now very intensified. We are very nervous, and we are now telling everybody at home to hide inside the room.
It's an eyewitness account from a resident of Kabul who lives close to the Intercontinental Hotel, describing the chaotic scene last night. 9 heavily armed attackers stormed into one of Kabul's most heavily guarded hotels. There was sporadic shooting, at least 2 explosions. You could see the flames from far away from the hotel. And Afghan security forces battled the insurgents for hours before they called in NATO helicopters to help them finish off that fight. Alyssa Rubin joins us now, Kabul bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. Alyssa, we're getting conflicting reports both about the numbers of people who were killed in the attack and who they were that were killed. What is the latest?
Well, I think there are still conflicting reports, but I think we sort of have a sense of the neighborhood. I've seen reports from reliable sources this morning, both security agencies, the National Intelligence Agency here, the NDS, National Directorate of Security, is saying 11 were killed, and the police chief of Kabul, who's also, of course, very involved in what happened last night, is saying 12. So it's in that range. Similarly, there's some confusion about how many suicide bombers were killed. I've seen 6, 7, and 8 this morning, all from people I think of as reliable, but obviously they haven't quite got all their information put together. This is often the case in these very complex bombing situations where there's multiple attackers. This happened under, cover of night, so people couldn't necessarily see everything that's happening. And, of course, it takes some time when a suicide bomber detonates himself to determine, to figure out, whether it was one person or 2 people. I mean, obviously, there's quite a bit of a mess after something like that happens.
Right. Alyssa Rubin, Kabul bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times. Alyssa, I know that the Taliban very quickly came out and claimed responsibility, but others are saying that it actually sounds more like the tactics of the Haqqani network. Are we sure who was responsible for the attack?
Well, I think these are anti-government insurgents, and the line between the Taliban and the Haqqani network is a very fine one, and one that perhaps terrorism experts draw, but that we often have seen Taliban spokesmen claiming credit on behalf of the Taliban for the Haqqani for actions that are carried out by the Haqqani group, and often the Taliban are facilitators, but perhaps not the planners. The Haqqani group might have been more involved in something of this nature, which it was an extremely complex attack and accomplished a variety of goals from the insurgents' point of view. It certainly grabbed media attention for hours. It's still, the main news, and it also did kill quite a few people and terrorized an area of the city. So it was quite effective from their standpoint, although, in fact, the Afghan security forces were able to handle quite a bit of it on their own, although certainly not all of it.
Alyssa Rubin is the Kabul bureau chief for our partner, The New York Times, reporting to us live from Afghanistan. Thanks, Alyssa. Also with us now is Christine Fair, assistant professor in the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. And Christine, you just heard Alyssa saying that the Afghan security forces handled most of the attack, but not all of it. What does this tell us about the preparedness of the Afghan forces in preparation as we get ready for U.S. troops to come home?
Well, in the bigger picture, actually, the Afghan National Security Forces have had primary responsibility for Kabul for quite some years now, and the role of NATO was really to provide backup assistance and other kinds of services that ANSF may not have, for example, like helicopter capabilities. And they've actually fared fairly well. Look, the issue with this hotel, and I've stayed in that hotel, is that this hotel is really quite vulnerable. Yes, it is itself on a hill, but it is itself surrounded by taller hills. And when I stayed there as a part of the election monitoring mission in 2009, which they were very concerned about an attack because of the high-level foreigners that were actually based there, the EU mission, for example, was based out of the Intercontinental Hotel, despite all of the heightened security arrangements, the place was still completely vulnerable. The security in and around the hotel is virtually non-existent. And as some of the hotels that that were very popular to foreigners, like the Serena, it was attacked a number of years ago, it completely buffed up its security and has brought back many of its many of the clients that fled the Serena briefly.
Christine,
so what you have is a target that's available.
But it's also, let's refine this for a second. I mean, this is an extraordinarily symbolic target that goes back to pre-Soviet times in Afghanistan. I actually stayed there myself. I mean, describe the symbolic significance of a strike there. Yes, it is vulnerable. Yes, it's surrounded by hills. But when I stayed there in the 90s, that place was, nearly like the parliament building in town.
Well, okay, so a couple of things, putting this into perspective. Since 9/11, there have been other opportunities in terms of accommodations that have opened up. Foreigners don't stay at this hotel. My read on this is the only people for whom the IC was, in fact, an icon are Afghans. So most of the people that were at the hotel were Afghans, or Afghan wedding parties. There was a high-level Afghan delegation of provincial governors. And so the hotel has a lot of cachet with Afghans. And so my read on this is that this was an attack on Afghans, albeit with an international audience. So my reading of this is really quite different. I've taken enormous exception to some of the characterizations of the hotel, that this was a citadel, that this was one of the most highly secured hotels in town. It's absolutely not true.
But
it was,
Christine,
very vulnerable,
you heard Elisa saying it was... You heard Elisa saying it was effective, that it, in fact, in terms of its effect on the Afghan people, that it did what it was meant to do, which was to terrorize them.
That's what I'm saying. But what I'm objecting to is, first of all, this was a soft target. It exactly hit the objective. It was low-hanging fruit for the Taliban. The only question is, why hadn't they done it before? And my read on this, the natural inclination is to say, oh, my gosh, you know, the Taliban are winning. In point of fact, many of the other targets in Kabul have hardened. Mm. And so they're trying to find places that have high impact, but which remain soft. And alas, this particular hotel. And there's a reason why they were so lax. Folks, the Intercontinental really had no reason to suspect that anyone would want to attack them.
Because there were no foreigners there. Christine Fair, we'll have to leave it there, assistant professor in the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.